Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Another episode of the Pro Wrestling Opinion Show, and today we are talking about three more of the greatest matches in the universe. I'm joined once again by One Silva. What's up, man?
Hey, good evening, Logan. Tonight we discuss three great matches from the 1980s, three single matches, five of the six competitors in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame.
Right, and how many of these guys are dead? Only a couple,
see,
right?
Andre... Only Andre's dead of the six, yeah.
Yeah, well, no, Dynamite Kid, he's still alive?
Oh, he's still alive.
He is, I did not know that. Okay, so we got, and Tiger Mask, of course, is still around.
He's a cripple, he's in a wheelchair, he's confined to a wheelchair, but he is alive.
But Tiger Mask is doing okay.
Yeah, Tiger Mask is alive, he's a wrestling trainer. Stan Hansen is retired with a load of money out in Texas, and Barry Windham works for the WWE, and his nephew is doing great things as Bray Wyatt, so yes.
So, okay, so we have three matches here. Why don't we go through them? What were the matches?
All right, from September 23rd, 1981, New Japan from Japan. Stan Hansen versus what was the greatest match of his career, the legendary Andre the Giant. Then we go to August 30th, 1982, I was at this match, Madison Square Garden, one of the great feuds in the history of professional wrestling, one of the great rivalries, the original Tiger Mask versus the aforementioned Dynamite Kid. And then, the final match, oh man, I've gotten a brain fart here. What the fuck?
The final match, Ric Flair versus Barry Windham.
From Valentine's Day, 1986, Battle of the Belts in Orlando, Florida, Championship Wrestling from Florida. Nature Boy Ric Flair defends the NWA World Championship against Barry Windham.
Okay, so now we got let's start with the Tiger Mask one, man.
Yeah, from 1981 to 1983, Tiger Mask and Dynamite Kid embarked in one of the great rivalries and feuds of all time. This is up on the level of Tanahashi Okada, Flair Steamboat, Frisco, as far as one of the great in-ring feuds of all time, and it's just a sensational feud. And these guys have been so influential in so many wrestlers today. You see Daniel Bryan, Jushin Liger, Chris Benoit before he died. All of these guys were idolized, these two guys, Ultimo Dragon as well.
Yeah, obviously. So we got this, but now he comes in to this match with a junior championship or something.
Tiger Mask is the World Wrestling Federation Junior Heavyweight Championship, and he's defending it here in Madison Square Garden against the Dynamite Kid.
Right. So this championship, tell us a little bit about it. I mean, because I'm not really familiar with it.
Well, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the original junior heavyweight champion was Tatsumi Fujinami in 79-1980. Then he moved up to heavyweight, and Tiger Mask received the belt afterwards, and he was defending it, and he was the main champion throughout the early 1980s.
So he was in the WWF then?
New Japan and the World Wrestling Federation had a trade agreement up until 1985.
Got it. All right. So, yeah, and so you have Dynamite Kid here, mainly known for his tag team stuff, right, at this point?
At this point, Dynamite Kid was, along with Tiger Mask, the two big stars of the New Japan Junior Heavyweight Division. He wasn't a tag team wrestler yet.
Okay. So he's, I guess we all know him as the British Bulldog, but at that time
he went into the WWF until 1984, I believe, with the great Davey Boy Smith. Up until this point right here, 1982, Dynamite Kid is basically a singles wrestler.
All right. So he's challenging here, and, man, what a start to this match. Instantly, you can see the flying tactics of Mr. Tiger Mask. He's got quite a spring in his step, doesn't he?
He might have the greatest footwork in the history of professional wrestling. And he's light on his fucking feet.
Yeah, I mean, in the first sequence, he goes from a headlock, very quickly twirls around to a leg block or something. I mean, you see that move he does where he just kind of flips around David Boy's body super fast.
There was another move where he throws Dynamite Kid into the ropes, and then he one leg kicks off his off of Dynamite's chin and does a somersault, just ridiculous.
Yeah, he runs up. He runs up Dynamite's chest, and then both of his feet flips over, and then comes back with a. I think it's a back body drop and then a drop kick. That sequence is incredible as well, knocking him out.
Then he looks like he's going to jump over the top rope, but instead he fakes it. It twirls back into the ring, just awesome on his feet. I want to talk about a match, and the first time I ever saw Tiger Mask was this match. But then later on in 1982, WWF Championship Wrestling, there was a match between him and Mr. Saito that were fucking off the charts, but I can't find it anywhere. I mean, just a ridiculous match. This guy was just sensational.
Now, what was his nationality? Mexican, right?
Oh, he's Japanese, but he had his start in Mexico.
Okay, because I know all the Spanish guys.
No, he's Japanese, Satoru Sayama. But
okay.
He wrestled in Mexico, and they still talk about it to this day. He had a Bruce Lee gimmick in Mexico. I believe the guy's name was Sammy Lee or some shit like that, where he played a Bruce Lee-type character, which went over huge in Mexico.
Okay, so in Mexico, he didn't use the Tiger Mask gimmick, is what you're saying.
I believe no, he was known as Sammy Lee. He was portrayed as a kung fu expert, like Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee's brother, Sam. I know that, like, he just had a big name. I mean, he was one of those wrestlers that people would name, like Hulk Hogan, Tiger Mask.
When you were a kid, he was one of the five or six names that it was like Superfly Snuka, Hulk Hogan, Junkyard Dog, Dusty Rhodes, and Tiger Mask, and Andre the Giant.
Kind of a ridiculous name, too, Tiger Mask, but whatever. Anyway, so he's in this match, you got Davey Boy kind of using his power now and then to get the advantage, but this guy just kept flipping out of everything.
The thing I noticed, Dynamite Kid in this match, while he's cut up, is not as bloated as he was when he came to the WWF a couple of years later.
Oh, yeah. He's completely, he's pumped up. He looks, you know, he's got that Chris Benoit physique, but, yeah, he's definitely definitely less muscly, but and quick, man, and very fast as well. And
Dynamite Kid, one of the greatest workers in the history of the sport. First ballot Hall of 1996. Meltzer put him in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, deservedly so. If you want to go top five greatest junior heavyweights of all time, these are two of the top five.
Yeah, I mean, early in the match, he has Tiger, and then Tiger Mask, you know, his amazing feat. He gets his head between Dynamite's legs, and he kind of just does a headstand and a weird little move and pops right out.
I love that, yeah.
There's this one scene, in that one sequence that you were talking about with that crazy kick, you know, when Davey Boy's in the corner. It looks like Davey Boy's going for like a power bomb or something, and Tiger Mask reverses it into like some kind of arm drag, and then sends him into the rope, and then does that crazy kick.
And then and these two guys had such great chemistry; they could create stuff off the top. They could improvise right away, and they would be able to, you know, do it flawlessly. It was just a great. And they talk about a wrestling ballet. What you would call it with these two guys.
Right, yeah. And then, this match is pretty quick. I mean, it's 8 minutes. At the end, Dynamite misses with a flying headbutt, and then he gets suplexed, and then Tiger goes for the moonsault, gets the pin.
A great ending to a great match. Man, Dynamite Kid, so many times, that fucking headbutt off his top rope. The last match we talked about Dynamite Kid was that WrestleMania 2 match against Beefcake and Valentine, where he takes a back bump to the concrete floor. God damn, that guy was reckless with his body. The reason why he's in a wheelchair and crippled.
Absolutely, yeah. He just took all kinds of risks. Now, this, I heard, was one of Vince McMahon's favorite matches. But that's just rumor. But, a guy that likes big guys.
He was announced at the match, and he's probably, he probably remembered this when they went and signed Dynamite Kid a couple years later.
Yeah, I bet he did. And it's interesting that he likes this match so much, given that he likes those big guys, and I don't think big guys could be doing these things. But they definitely pulled it off here. And I like the idea of a cruiserweight champion or a junior champion. I don't know why they don't still do that, but they did it in WCW for a while, and I thought it worked. The smaller guys get to shine, and I wish they would go back to that. But then, then they put Daniel Bryan there, and not in the heavy division.
So all right, real quickly, before we go to the next match, Dynamite Kid, Tiger Mask would only wrestle with New Japan for another year when he would quit because he had discovered that Tony Inoki, the head of New Japan, the top star and the president of New Japan Wrestling, was embezzling money and stuffing his pockets and stealing money from the other wrestlers. So Tiger Mask outed him, but no one would side with him. So in disgust, he quit and he became a mixed martial artist, which he did for the last 30 years. He's been involved in mixed martial arts.
Oh, shit. So he's kind of one of the early practitioners of this sport.
Yes, he's one of the early practitioners of mixed martial arts. Yes, he helped form the Universal Wrestling Federation in 1984, which was the first mixed martial arts company known to mankind worldwide.
Okay, well, listen, we're going to... unfortunately, I didn't set the show up correctly, so we're going to get cut off. So I'm gonna call you right back with
all right, I'll wait on your call.
In about 5-10 minutes.
Hello, due to technical difficulties, we're unable to get the review sound of the Andre vs. Hansen match. We will get that at some future date. We're going to pick up with the Flair vs. Wyndham match from 1986.
Okay, back now, and we are talking. We just finished talking about Andre versus Stan Hansen. Anything else you want to add about that?
Now we go on to the final match of three matches: Ric Flair versus Barry Windham for the NWA Championship of Championship Wrestling for Florida's Battle of the Belts, number 2, February 14th, 1986.
Yeah. Now this match, what was it called? Battle of the Belts.
Florida, NWA Florida, Championship Wrestling of Florida, at this time run by Mike Graham, the son of Eddie Graham. It was a Florida territory of the NWA, and they had every 6 months a Battle of the Belts. They had one in September of 85, February of 86, which we're talking about, and they would have one final one in September of 86. And on our next program, we'll be talking about a match from that Battle of the Belts. So, yeah, this was their big sort of like WrestleMania Starrcade type event for the Florida territory.
So was Barry Windham now number one contender here. He hadn't been in the Horsemen or anything. This was way before that.
He hadn't been in the promotion 6 months. He left the WWF in August of 1985 to go back to Florida to help run Florida with his father, Barry Windham, and to help his brother, Kendall Windham, was wrestling at that time as a 20-year-old skinny motherfucker. But Barry Windham went back to help them run this territory.
Okay, well, this match then, they had, now, how many matches did they wrestle? I just remember them being kind of like feuding for a while.
Well, they wrestled several times in Florida prior to this when Flair first became NWA champion in the early 80s. Windham would be one of the guys he would always wrestle when he would visit the Florida territory, and in this occasion as well. At this point in time, Barry Windham was the top face in Florida, with the top heel being Lex Luger, the Southern Heavyweight Champion, a rookie Lex Luger.
And Ric Flair here in his little promo at Jenny, he doesn't sound too heelish to me. He's kind of
Love the promo. Kind of ironic, the guy who interviews him, Buddy Colt, both of these guys were involved in major plane crashes. Both of these guys, Buddy Colt's plane crash ended his career, and Ric Flair's plane crash kept him out of wrestling for 6 months.
Damn. And so, yeah, this guy is sucking his cock in this interview, telling him he's the greatest champion of all time, and Ric Flair's just, like, calmly agreeing with it.
Greatest of all time. Not only what I love about this, the beginning of the match, the introductions, Ric Flair comes down to the ring to not his 2001 song, but Easy Lover.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Wow. No, you don't get more 80s than Ric Flair and Easy Lover by Phil Collins and Philip Bailey.
I don't know what it was with Phil Collins in wrestling, but, like, they used him a lot. I know that Vince would always end Saturday night's main event with his shit, but
I remember one promo that Jim Anvil had that had me rolling. Him and Bret Hart were being interviewed on a Saturday night's main event. I think it was either 89 or 90, and he tells Mean Gene, just like Phil Collins said, two hearts can beat as one.
So true, man. So you get Windham, of course, comes in. He's a lot bigger than Flair, and he starts getting the upper hand. Flair bails, and then Windham gets that headlock on Flair. Now, there's a lot of wrestling in this.
This is a great fucking match. Unbelievable. This match incorporates brawling, wrestling, psychology, and all those critics of Flair who say every match looks the same, this match looks nothing like another Flair match we've covered.
Yeah, this looks totally unique in and of itself.
Yes.
You have Flair doing a lot of moves that you don't usually see.
Flair was phenomenal in this match, and Flair always stepped it up when he wrestled guys. Ric Flair's favorite opponents throughout the 80s were Kerry Von Erich, Barry Windham, Hacksaw Butch Reed, and Ricky Steamboat. He loved wrestling those guys because those guys could hang with him, and those guys made him look good, and he made them look even better.
Yeah, so, I mean, this match goes on. I mean, this match is almost like a 45-minute match or something. I mean, it's
41 minutes. A 41-minute match, back and forth. Both guys blade. They trade every big move in the book. You got the figure four. Windham's figure four was sloppy because his legs are too fucking long to put it on correctly, sort of like Lex Luger. It doesn't work when you have long fucking legs like Barry Windham. But when Flair puts it on, he puts it on perfect, and Wyndham does the reverse. It's just back and forth. You see Flair gets tossed into the corner, and he does the flip, but instead of running to the other side, he just falls to the canvas.
In one spot, he gets thrown into the rope, and it looks like he slams his head on the rope or something.
At the beginning of the match, it looks like it's a mistake on his part, but he turns it into it was supposed to happen where he hit his head on the top of the of the rope. And Gordon Soley, by the way, you hear a lot of Jim Ross and Gordon Soley. You see the influence of Gordon Soley and Jim Ross. Gordon Soley, at the beginning, talks about Ric Flair came from the University of Minnesota. Barry Windham, a graduate of West Texas State University. You hear a lot of, you see where Jim Ross got his broadcasting style by listening to Gordon Soley. Gordon Soley was phenomenal in this fucking match. And Mike Graham, even though he's an asshole, was great in this match as well. Comparing it to football and basketball and how, when Flair puts his foot on the ropes while he's when has Flair in the Boston Crab, Flair grabs the ropes and Graham says, that's like running out of bounds in football. I love that analogy.
Yeah, well, and when he gets them in that thing, Flair sells the fuck out of it afterward. Yeah. Like, he can barely get up.
Wyndham is wrenching back on it like he really's got the hold on.
Oh, yeah, he's really, Flair is showing his flexibility there. But yeah, when he gets hit with his head on that rope thing, he plays possum, and it looks like Wyndham kind of backs off and then gets chopped for his trouble. So that kind of kicks the match up a notch where basically, like, you know, Wyndham stops fucking giving Flair anything and just starts going after him. And
I love about this match, you don't see, other than the only time I saw Flair be a heel of cheat is when he had Wyndham in the figure four and he held the ropes. Other than that, clean match.
But that's classic Flair stuff to do that. They're just constantly going back and forth and reversing each other and then getting a little bit of the upper hand. I think for the most of the match it's Wyndham, but Flair gets a lot of offense also. And so they kind of both make each other look very good. There's a ref bump, and then Flair basically throws Wyndham over the top rope.
Yeah.
And
referee off one of our favorite managers, Fonzie, Bill Alfonso.
Okay, yeah, he's good. And
Bill Alfonso was a great referee, yes.
Now, there's a great, you said, there's a figure four by, there's a sleeper by Flair, there's a sleeper by Wyndham.
Once again, Gordon Soley, phenomenal. And you kids out there, do not try this at home, because when you cut off the carotid artery, sounding like Gorilla Monsoon, the carotid artery, you can really do damage. Youngsters out there, do not try this at home.
I know, man. It's great too, just because they also talk about his sleeper not being that good, you know, when he was saying like that.
Another thing, Flair doesn't use the sleeper; he used it in this match. This match looked like Flair's a typical Flair match. This looks like something totally different.
Flair gets a pile driver on.
That was the worst move of the match because Flair does not do a good pile driver, and Wyndham's head came nowhere near the canvas.
No, it looked like the Harley Race shit that Harley Race used to do.
It was all Flair's ass. That was
the yeah, exactly. He gets reversed and backdropped when he tries to go for it again. Big lariat by Wyndham. That's where, you know, Flair's just throwing that foot up on the rope.
Flair's timing is uncanny. The referee's going, one, two, and right before he hits three, Flair puts his foot on the ropes.
And that's where he gets thrown into the turnbuckle and flips under the floor. Then Wyndham goes out and puts Rick's head into the ring post. Then when they get back in the ring, Wyndham gets...
What I love about this part, he hits Flair hits the post, falls down. Then Wyndham talks to distract the fans. Wyndham barks at Alfonso so Flair can do the quick blade.
Oh, okay, that's where it was. So Windham's got Flair in the corner. He's pounded him. Flair gets him for the reverse atomic drop, and then Flair throws Windham out of the ring. And then when he's trying to come back in the ring, he goes for the sunset flip. I think he almost gets a count there, and then he goes on the sleeper. He gets a sleeper on Flair. Flair is bloody at this point, and I wondered where the fuck he did that.
That was from the post, and then Windham distracts the referee and distracts the fans so Flair could blade real quick.
So there's one good move here, too, where Windham is trying to get out of the sleeper, and he falls forward into the turnbuckle and bashes Flair's head into it.
Love that section, yes.
Flair gets a pretty awesome suplex on a big man here, and Flair was always good at that suplex that he left hanging in the air.
We'll leave you hanging for a few seconds. You still love that suplex.
Yeah. He's starting to set him up for the figure four, putting him, Windham's leg on the rope, and then we finally get the figure four by Flair. He's grabbing the ropes for leverage. Windham eventually turns that shit over, and then Flair does his little top rope spot, and Windham misses the knee, you know, goes for a knee drop and misses. Flair gets the upper hand, and then Flair jumps on both feet, jumps on Windham's chest with both feet. Saw that move. That's something he doesn't usually do. He throws him into a, I guess he gets a knee in his stomach. He gets a two count. Then that's where the ref bumps, and Ric Flair throws Windham over the top. And Windham gets an awesome drop kick off the top rope.
Yes. But because the ref was bumped, Windham doesn't get the three count. So this right here keeps Windham alive, even though he doesn't win the match, keeps Windham alive as a fresh opponent. He keeps his... what you call it, I forgot the term, but it keeps his mojo going because he should have won the match.
So Windham goes for a sleeper, then he goes for a splash. Flair gets his knees up, and then he goes for the figure four and gets cradled, but they're in the ropes. So then a big suplex by Windham. Windham then misses with the elbow drop. Flair does a flip off the rope, gets a fist in the stomach. You know, that thing where he runs to the other side and jumps off. He gets punched in the stomach. Both go over the top together, they're counted out after brawling outside. So it was, I'm sure it was a disappointing conclusion for the people that were watching, but, you know, it was a great match while you're watching it. It really looked like Windham was going to maybe win the title.
This match was voted the Observer Match of the Year for 1986. And as you can see, just a sensational match. And on the next wrestling program that we do, we'll be talking about his September 1986 Battle of the Belts 3 match with Lex Luger, which was the first great match of Luger's career. I mean, Flair made Luger look like $1 million. And we'll be talking about that match on the next show. This was a great match. Flair continued to travel as the NWA champion. Windham would eventually leave Florida in early 87 to join the WCW and Crockett Promotions, and he would have a feud with Flair there. We covered one of those matches from April of 1987, and it was the Crockett Cup, and we covered that match a year ago. Great match.
Now he won from Flair at one point, or he got the title somehow.
He did get the NWA title in 1992. He beat the Great Muta for it. And then he would lose it to Flair when Flair returned to WCW in 93.
Okay, so he never actually got the win over Flair.
No, he never beat Flair for the title, no.
But did he ever pin him at all?
In non-title matches, yeah, never in a
title. In non-title, yeah, where it counted, no.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, good. So we got these three matches with all these issues, but we finally got them. So, all right, dude.
Three different shows, three different matches. But with the magic of technology and Logan's hands, it's all going to be in one edit.
It will do. You won't even notice. All right, man. Thanks again, dude. We'll talk soon.
All right, talk to you next week, big man. Thank you.
Good.